Warm fingers pressing into the flesh of her arms shot a warm tingle along her skin, but she forced herself to follow his instructions.
Good. First thing to remember is, you don't want to step closer to administer any of the strikes I'll show you in a little while. If he's too far for you to use your hands, then use your feet and give him a hard kick in his knee. To do that, you can't be afraid to kick out with all your strength. Let's practice. To kick out, turn a bit to the side and punch out with your foot like this.
A loud thud echoed from the high ceilings as his bare foot hit the bag. She eyed the punching bag and imagined where Garrett's knees might be. Gritting her teeth, she struck out with her foot, and the impact sent ripples up her leg.
Nice! But turn your foot a little bit more so you're not hitting your toes against the knee. You have more strength in the side or blade of your foot.
He demonstrated the move again. She nodded and did it again. This time, the punching bag yielded a satisfying thud and swung away from her.
Great job. Now, practice that for a bit and alternate your legs to get a feel for which one gives you the most stability and powerful kick.
He folded his arms across his broad chest and stood back to watch her. Her stance was probably off, but right now she didn't care. Imagining Garrett on the ground and unable to hurt her drove her on to kick and kick and kick some more. She had no idea how long she stayed at it, but when Boone finally stopped her, she was drenched in perspiration and breathing hard through her mouth. Her leg muscles ached, too. He handed her a clean white towel.
You were imagining hitting Waterman, weren't you?
She dabbed the towel over her face and nodded.
He's likely the only one I'll ever have to take down. It's good to personalize it, but you have to be prepared for anyone coming after you. Someone could jump you in an alley or a parking lot. I want you prepared to handle it all.
I'll get there.
She handed the towel back to him. I'd better get home to shower and put away more of my stuff. It's only 3:30. How about I show you around the camp before it gets dark? I'd even come help you unpack if you need a strong back.
She shouldn't agree, but she found herself nodding and turning toward her shoes and coat.
Boone watched as the boats pulled onto the shore of Lake Superior. You ever been ice sailing? She looked adorable with her red nose peeking out from under her fur hood.
I've heard about it, but never tried it. I saw boats in Houghton when I went to college and always wanted to try it. How long have you been taking people out?
About 2 years. I was the first outfitter here to rent out boats. Until I opened, everyone had to go to Houghton.
It had taken every bit of money and sacrifice he could muster to make a go of it at first. People in this area were more interested in renting a snow machine rather than an ice boat. His sister had created a website for him, and it had brought in tourists. Just a trickle at first, but that small stream had turned into a flood this past year. His heart squeezed. Renee would never know how her work had helped him. She died before it had all turned around.
Dana touched his gloved hand. You look sad again.
He forced a smile.
No one ever gets that but you.
I'm fine.
No, you're not. Your eyes went all distant and your mouth tugged down at the corners. You hunched into yourself as well.
What are you? Some kind of body language expert?
He wasn't ready to talk to anyone about Renee. It was still too painful.
She removed her hand. A dispatcher learns to read people. Besides, as I recall, you spent some time telling me I was putting on a front. The road goes both ways, buddy.
He'd offended her, and he hadn't meant to get so prickly. I was thinking about how my sister made a website for me. My business is successful thanks to her, and I never got to tell her.
It felt good to say it instead of keeping it pent up inside. Her blue eyes went soft, and she tucked a stray curl back under her hood.
I'm sorry. I remember how I felt when my parents drowned.
They drowned?
How old were you?
8.
That's when I came to live with Chris and his parents.
He shook his head.
Wait, I thought Chris was your brother.
Well, he is. They adopted me, but his dad was my dad's brother. Chris was my aunt's son and my uncle's stepson.
She smiled. It's complicated, I know. He was 14 when it happened.
We'd been here for a vacation, and were out on Superior. Chris was with them, and I was with his parents. They beached their boat for a picnic,
and they must have broken through the hull somehow because after they launched again, the boat sank. Chris was the only one wearing a life jacket. He tried to get the locker open to get to the other jackets, but it was locked. Her voice broke, and she looked out over the lake. He was freezing cold and frantic by the time my uncle pulled him from the water. The scene played out in his head like a movie. What a horrific thing to experience at such a young age. Did they recover the bodies? The Coast Guard searched for 4 days. My uncle barely slept because he was out on his own boat. Dad was his only sibling. She rubbed her head. To tell you the truth, I try to block out as much of that awful day as I can. It was at Copper Falls. Superior doesn't give up her dead easily. The lake still held many a sailor in death's grip. The cold water and lack of bacteria tended to keep bodies on the bottom. This time he touched her hand. So you stayed in Rock Harbor and never went back to your home. Where did you live before?
Washington. That's one of the reasons I agreed to move when Garrett asked me. I wanted to see if I remembered any old friends, to walk the same streets I did as a child, and to see the house where I'd lived for 8 years. It wasn't what I expected. So much had changed. None of my friends were even still in the area, and they'd torn down the school I attended. Even the house looked different. Smaller somehow. He had the feeling she didn't talk about this much with anyone, and the realization touched him. He tucked her hand into his arm and turned her toward the main building.
I can't offer much in the way of dinner, but I make a mean deli sandwich. And I've got chips. Sound tempting at all? After that workout, I could eat one of these rocks.
Her rumbling stomach punctuated her words, and she laughed.
See?
He shortened his steps to match her stride.
You nervous about starting work next week?
A little. I'll have to prove myself to the other dispatchers, even though I've been doing it for years. A dispatcher's shift is spent praying for boredom, because a true emergency can leave you scarred for life. It could be a kid who found her mother dead of an overdose, or a woman screaming for help as the man who promised to love and protect her beats her brains out. He grimaced and opened the door to the outfitter's shop.
Why do you do it, then?
Color ran up her neck.
I like to help. It's a pretty lame excuse, I know, but it's all I've got.
When the worst happened to me, I wished I had someone to talk to, but everyone was so focused on finding my parents that I sat in the corner by myself for 4 days. I often follow up with the callers and stop by to see them. It's not much, but it's something. And isn't that all any of us can do in this life? What we can? Her earnest expression touched his soul. He needed to do more of that himself. Chapter 11. Bree chose not to say anything about Emily's new hair color as the 15-year-old led her into the house.
Good morning, honey. How's Naomi doing?
It was hard to keep from staring at the pink hair. From the entry, she could see into the living room, which for once didn't look like a tornado had scattered toys. Naomi's golden retriever, Charlie, tail swishing, came to greet her. Samson whined, and the two dogs sniffed noses. Emily kept the door open after letting Bree inside.
She's fine. Cleaning up the kitchen after breakfast. I've got to run catch the school bus. My brother's already waiting.
She tossed her hair a bit as if gauging Bree's reaction.
The girl was probably already turning heads. Slim but curvy, she had a vivacious personality that matched her usually dark curls and beautiful complexion. Today, she wore leather boots over slim-fitting jeans and a pink parka that fought with her hair for dominance. Bree might as well take pity on her.
Did you color your hair yourself? Nice pink shade.
Mom helped me. Dad threatened to lock me out of the house, but Mom intervened, and he didn't have the heart to say no to an injured woman.
Emily flashed an impudent grin, then waved goodbye and shut the door. Naomi's voice floated from the kitchen.
I'm in here, Bree.
Bree kicked off her boots and went to find her with both dogs trotting after her. Still in red pajamas and fluffy bear slippers, Naomi loaded the dishwasher. Her light brown hair was in its usual long braid, and she looked bright-eyed and happy. The kitchen smelled totally yummy with cinnamon and berries. Bree snatched a partial pancake before Naomi could deposit it in the trash.
Don't waste it!
It was mostly cold,
but the thimbleberry jam made up for it. Naomi shuddered.
I'll make you a hot one, but the thimbleberry jam would be lost. She licked her fingers.
I'd take some coffee, though. It's fresh. Naomi poured coffee into a pretty blue mug and handed it to her. Bree went to the table, still sticky with the kids' breakfast. Charlie and Samson lay at her feet, the picture of perfect contentment. Bree felt that way herself, sitting here in the warm kitchen with her best friend. Bree took a sip of her coffee. Coffee always tastes better in a blue mug. Which is why that's all I have in my kitchen. Naomi took her own mug of coffee to join Bree at the table.
What are you doing here so early? You caught me still in my jams.
Just checking on you. You remember anything else about your fall? They'd been best friends for years, and Naomi had been a right-hand girl with SAR training. They'd been each other's confidant through romance and marriage, and had been there for one another when their children were born.
I sort of remember that scarf you all talked about. I can't remember much about it. I thought for sure my memory would come back.
Let's go through everything you remember. Bree sipped her coffee. You parked along the road, right? A frown crouched between Naomi's blue eyes.
Yes, near the cutoff for the lake.
Did you put on your hat, zip up your coat? Let's go, step by step.
I wore my red sock hat and gloves. It was super cold on the walk out to the top of the falls. When I reached the site,
She rubbed her head. It's almost there. I just can't quite grab it.
You often drop articles of clothing on the way to where you want to hike. Did you do that? Or make it harder?
That's it! Naomi's eyes sparkled. I went to the top of the waterfall to drop a spare glove I'd worn the day before. I put another one back in the trees to lead them astray and make it a little harder. That's when I saw the scarf on the aspen tree branch. I started to pick it up. Then I heard the dogs barking and knew I'd better hide. I went to my spot.
Her smile faded.
Uh-oh.
What's wrong?
I didn't fall. I heard something behind me. Then it was lights out. I think someone hit me. I heard someone running toward me, feet crunching through the ice, but I didn't get a chance to even turn around.
So it could have been Garrett. Think back. What did you hear, smell, feel?
Naomi reached for a partial piece of bacon still on the table and popped it into her mouth. Her gaze took on a faraway glint as she chewed.
I smelled wood smoke. Like he'd been near a fire.
Dead end. But at least Dana had identified the scarf as belonging to Garrett. That might be enough. The warm scent of something cinnamony and sweet hit Boone's nose as soon as Dana opened the door.
Whoa, what smells so good?
She'd changed into jeans and a V-neck top in royal blue that made her eyes look deep and mysterious. Her brown curls looked still damp and curled around her head.
Homemade cinnamon rolls. I figured if you were going to work hard, the least I could do was feed you.
He deposited his coat into her outstretched hand and looked through the doorway into the living room.
Doesn't look like you've made any changes yet.
Wait until you see upstairs. This floor is Chris's domain, and I don't want to touch it, even though he said I could. I want it to still feel like his haven when he walks in.
Boone flexed his arm. Let's get to it so I can have one of those rolls.
Oh, I was going to give you all you wanted before I work you like a mule. They're best when they're warm. She gestured to the door to the kitchen.
Lead the way.
As he stepped into the kitchen, he heard the soundtrack to Phantom of the Opera playing in the background. Music of the Night was one of his favorites.
A Phantom fan, I take it? Is that why you named your dog Phantom?
She shrugged. Well, he was black, and the other yellow lab shunned him. It made me think of Phantom's rejection by society. He snagged a still warm cinnamon roll and bit into it.
Wow, these are great.
She smiled and reached for one, too. It's my favorite movie.
You'd think having watched it so much would have protected me from being attracted to a bad boy like Garrett.
So what attracted you? She paused, and a line of puzzlement marred her forehead.
It was his focus, I think.
At first it was like there was no one in the world except me. After my aunt and uncle adopted me, I always felt just a little bit invisible. They had Chris, the golden boy who was good at everything. I was average. Average grades, average athletic ability, average looks. Hardly average with those gorgeous eyes. But he bit back the observation. And Garrett looked harder. It was just an act. I found that out soon enough. She fussed with her hair again, pushing it out of her face. I like your curls, but you hate them, don't you? She rolled her eyes. I hate the way it frizzes. How'd you know? You're always shoving at it. He reached over and gently tucked a stray lock behind her ear. You could treat it with respect. It's cute. So what about Garrett? Did you realize he was one of those bad boys right from the beginning, but you couldn't help yourself? She shook her head. He seemed a dream come true at first. Sometimes the bad apples are hard to recognize. The smile faded in her eyes. You say that like you have experience. Maybe we have something in common? He wasn't ready to talk about Esther. Maybe I'll tell you about it someday. So, what about the whole Phantom thing? Why is it your favorite? Does there have to be a reason beyond the awesome music? An adorable dimple appeared in her right cheek. He wanted to run his thumb over it. There usually is. You'll mock me? Never. He put his hand over his heart. I know it's silly, but I just love the way it portrays love as lasting a lifetime. Both men loved Christine all their lives, but one with an obsession, and the other with a love that wanted what was best for her. She blew her bangs out of her eyes. I want to make sure I know the difference. When you first find the secret to that, let me know, okay? Like I said, it's hard to tell the difference. Her blue eyes went somber. I think the signs are there if we look for them. I didn't. Did you? For example, I ignored how Garrett only talked about how I looked on the outside. I skimmed over his insistence on seeing the movie he wanted and going where he wanted for dinner. He rarely asked me what I wanted, and the few times I voiced an opinion, he sulked for the rest of the evening. I just didn't pay attention. Esther's beautiful face flashed into his mind. She'd been all about showing him off and talking about how brave he was to fight fires. She'd always wanted her own way, too. Good lesson. He swallowed the last of the cinnamon roll. What do you have planned for me this afternoon? What's your view on painting? Love it or hate it? He normally would have said he'd rather take any job but painting, but heaven help him, he wanted to see that dimple again. Middle of the road. What are we painting? My bedroom. I like the gray-green color, but it's marked and faded. If I don't get it painted before I start work, I'll be stuck with it until at least next weekend. Lead the way. He followed her up the stairs to her bedroom. The chest and tables sat out from the walls about 4 feet, but the bed was still only a few inches out. The curtains and bedding had disappeared, and the weak autumn light flooded the space. I couldn't move the bed by myself. I'd like to disassemble it completely so I can put down my own rug. My bed is in the other room, too. I want to get rid of this monstrosity. Do we need more help to do that? Heck no. He hoisted the mattress off the bed. Where you want this? She led him to the empty second bedroom. Throw it anywhere. I'm not sure what Chris wants to do with the old furniture, but it can live here for now. He leaned it against a wall that was painted that same ugly green, then went back for the bed frame. Without the furniture, the room looked enormous. She was on the floor opening the paint can, and he caught a glimpse of the color, a pale gray. As he began to roll the paint on the walls, he found himself wondering where she'd like to go for dinner. The air was cold and crisp this morning. Bree had stopped by Naomi's to check on her, as well as to grab Charlie to help Samson with the search for the scarf's owner. None of the rest of her team had been able to come, but she had the two best dogs. Mason and a couple of deputies waited for them. Her breath blew out in a fog as she stood by where they'd found the scarf and held it under the dogs' noses. Search Samson! Find him, Charlie! The dogs sniffed the scarf all over, then ran back and forth, their muzzles in the air. The dogs weren't bloodhounds, but air scenters. They worked in a Z pattern until they could catch a hint of the one scent they sought. Samson's tail stiffened, and he turned and followed the tracks the man had left. We probably won't get anywhere, Mason panted as he jogged with her behind the dogs. They'll track into the road and lose him.
She and the sheriff had been friends as well as allies for many years now. His wife, Hillary, was her first husband's twin sister. A stocky man in his early 40s with dark curly hair, Mason had often been the stable rock Bree needed when the whole world was quaking. She wasn't ready to admit defeat yet. It's worth a try. Since Naomi remembers being struck, it wasn't an accident. The dogs moved fast, and her chest burned trying to keep up in the cold air. The dogs reached a clearing and stopped, nosing around again. Samson looked at her and whined. They couldn't have lost the scent yet. The tracks were still right there, and the road was about 10 yards away. The dogs should at least track him to the road. Samson whined again and came to press himself against her leg. What's wrong, boy? Mason walked in a circle around the clearing. There are tons of tracks through here. Maybe the dogs are confused. The tracks shouldn't confuse them. She rubbed her dog's head to comfort him. He doesn't know which way to go. Maybe the guy circled around enough that the scent leads in several directions. Maybe so. Mason shrugged and turned toward the road where he had parked his cruiser. It was worth a try. She called the dogs to her and had them sniff the scarf again, but they continued to mill around the clearing with no idea where to go. It definitely was a bust. Chapter 12. The warm blush of sun on her arms had turned to a golden brown. Laurie stretched on the beach towel, then turned over onto her stomach. 6 glorious days in paradise so far, and they had to leave tomorrow. She didn't want it to end. Peter had already come to mean so very much to her. She'd never believed in love at first sight, but she was deep in its throes now. He taught her how little she knew about love. She turned her head and smiled at Peter, who returned it. He was as brown as a Greek god in his bright blue swim trunks and looked just as appealing with his skin gleaming from Maui Babe oil. The scent of kukui nut oil blended with the salty tang of the ocean, adding to her feelings of contentment. Lawai Beach was a small cove, and not many tourists were here today. They had the sliver of golden sand all to themselves, except for a retired couple parked under the shade of the tree by the sidewalk. Surfers rode the waves out past the reef. She reached across the sand to take his hand. "I never want to leave." His blue eyes darkened, and he squeezed her hand. "Me neither. Let's just run away and stay here forever." "If only we could. I'm even a decent snorkeler, thanks to you." His fingers tightened on hers. "You're way more than that to me. I don't know how I lived without you in my life. I don't want to leave you." "I'll be back in 2 more weeks. When will you return this way? I'm not supposed to come back for a month, but maybe I can change my schedule." They had been very much in the moment this whole week, and she realized she'd never even told him where she lived, and she didn't know where he lived. "I don't suppose your home base is in Washington State. I travel there next." His eyes brightened. "I'm going there next, too." "Where are you staying?" "In Seattle." "I'm in Tacoma. That's not far. I can easily hop over to see you." He sat up and brushed the sand from his hands. "I'm not letting you go, Laurie. You've changed my life. I love you, you know. I haven't said it because it seems so fast, but you are everything I've looked for all my life." Her mouth went dry, and she sat up quickly. A woman shouldn't get a declaration of love while lying on her belly in the sand. She clasped her knees to her chest. "I feel the same, Peter. I know it's fast, but the minute I saw you, I knew you were special. I don't know what I've done to deserve meeting you, but I never want to lose you." He scooted over to her towel and put his arm around her. "Don't ever hurt me, Laurie. I couldn't take it." "I'd rather die than hurt you," she whispered. "I'd never do it." He tucked a strand of hair behind one of her ears with such tenderness that she ached. Such an amazing man. And he loved her. How could that be? Her brown hair and blue eyes weren't anything special. She had an okay figure, but it wasn't one to stop traffic. She leaned her cheek against his chest, warm with the sun. "Why me?" "That's what I was about to say. You could have your pick of guys, and I'm older than you. You're what, 23?
"Yes."
"I'm 36, old by comparison."
"You're not old. You're so strong and handsome, you take my breath away."
His white teeth flashed in a smile. I like to hear that. Would you consider a lifetime with me? Her breath caught in her throat. Was he saying what she thought he was saying? Her gaze searched his face, and the love in his eyes brought tears to hers. I feel like I've come home when I'm with you. Wherever you are is where I want to be.
When things are right, you just know. And I know I want to marry you, Laurie. We'll have a great life together.
His warm arm left her side, and he reached for the beach bag he'd brought. His hand dove inside and emerged with a small white box. Laurie couldn't tear her gaze away. She couldn't think, couldn't breathe. How could her life change so dramatically in a week? He got on his knees and took her hand. Laurie, will you marry me? He opened the box to reveal a diamond ring. The stone looked enormous to Laurie. Other diamonds twinkled around the platinum setting. A band of rose gold with platinum bands on either side made it unique.
It's the most beautiful ring I've ever seen, she whispered.
When did you have time to get it?
But there was no lack of jewelry stores on the island. She reached for it, and he snatched it back with a teasing grin.
You haven't answered me.
She threw her arms around his neck, and they both nearly toppled to the sand.
Yes, yes, of course.
Tears made hot tracks down her cheeks.
I'm so happy, Peter, so incredibly happy.
He plucked the ring from its home and slipped it onto her finger. It twinkled in the bright sunlight. A bird landed nearby, as if drawn by the ring's glitter. Laurie felt just as mesmerized as the bird. Peter brushed a kiss across her lips.
Happy? Deliriously. I can't wait to tell my brother and his wife.
His blue eyes darkened. They might think I'm too old for you.
Oh, don't be silly. They will love you as much as I do. You're not old, and that's final.
My friends will say, I have a trophy wife. And I do. He nuzzled her neck.
You smell so good.
What do you say we bust out of here and go to my place? We can order in sushi and watch a movie. I'd take you out tonight, but I don't want to share you. Not tonight when I have to leave tomorrow.
I can't think of anything I'd rather do, she whispered.
Dana's first day of work. The Rock Harbor dispatch office looked like most. Lots of desk areas with banks of computer screens and the incessant sound of phones ringing. The American flag hung on one wall, and county maps covered a perpendicular wall. At least this office had windows along one side that let in the sparkle of sun on the snow outside. The odor of fresh paint permeated the room and overlaid that of sweet perfume worn by one of the dispatchers. Three other dispatchers looked up briefly when Dana came in. They sized her up before returning to their screens. It must be a busy day, probably people in the ditches from last night's snowstorm. One station was free, so she slid into the office chair and logged in. The radio was already live, crackling with static and voices. The hubbub died down as she put on her headset and rolled her chair up to the keyboard.
You must be Dana.
A woman in her 50s sent a smile her way. Her graying brown hair was cut in a stylish bob, and she wore just enough makeup to enhance her hazel eyes. Her khaki slacks held a precise crease, and she'd topped it with a navy lace top.
I'm Karen Patton, senior dispatcher.
Dana felt decidedly underdressed in her jeans and sweatshirt. Mason had told her the department had casual dress.
Dana Newell, nice to meet you.
Karen waved a plump hand sparkling with rings toward the woman to her left.
That's Tracy Pitt, also known as Babelicious by the guys.
She dropped her voice to a whisper.
Don't let her see you trying to cut into her territory. She's apt to sabotage your computer.
Dana vaguely remembered meeting the younger woman the day she'd interviewed. She sent a smile toward her. Tracy didn't seem to notice the introduction and kept her gaze on her screens. About 25, she had straight black hair. Her high cheekbones and coloring hinted at some Native American in her heritage, though her skin was as pale as if she never went in the sun. Dana could see why the guys hung around her. The man on Dana's other side stood and stretched. In his early 40s, he was about 5'10 and stocky, with dark hair that hadn't started graying yet. When he held out his hand, she caught the glint of his wedding band. He shook her hand.
Mark Johansson.
You probably don't remember me, but Chris and I used to go ice fishing together.
I thought you looked a little familiar.
Tell him to call me the next time he's in town.
Mark headed for the door.
See you girls later. It's quitting time for me.
Dana waved as she answered another call, just a breakdown in the county that she reported. Tracy finally turned from her screens.
So, you're the new girl. Her smile didn't reach her eyes. The guys told me I had competition.
Her tone implied she didn't see it herself. Dana forced a smile.
I'm not even in the running.
Tracy sniffed, but the glint in her dark brown eyes faded.
You're married?
Dana shook her head as her phone rang.
911, what is your emergency?
My husband, he yelled and fell down. I think he's having a heart attack.
The woman was sobbing so hard it was difficult to understand her. Dana looked at her screen and rattled off the address showing there.
Is that your location? And are you Helen Grayson?
Yes, yes. Please send an ambulance.
I'm sending one now. Please stay on the line with me.
Dana opened her mouth to ask the woman if she could pray with her, then pressed her lips together. She didn't want to get off on the wrong foot at her new job. Once the ambulance was dispatched, she had Mrs. Grayson kneel beside her husband.
Is he breathing?
Yes, yes, I think so. But he's not waking up.
The woman's voice held a tighter edge of hysteria.
Is he going to die?
He's still breathing, so that's good. Do you know CPR?
No.
Mrs. Grayson began sobbing again.
I should have taken a class. We're getting older.
Dana heard the reedy wail of a siren. The paramedics are almost there. Go to the door and open it so they can get in right away.
Okay.
The phone clicked in Dana's ear before she could remind Mrs. Grayson to stay on the line, but the paramedics should be walking in the door now. She logged in the details of the call. It felt good to be back in her element, doing what she loved most. The call center fell silent for nearly an hour. Her phone rang again, and she glanced at the screen as she answered. The cell phone call's coordinates showed on her monitor.
911, what is your emergency?
She looked closer. The cell phone belonged to Allison.
He's going to kill me next.
The harsh whisper was barely audible.
Allison, what's wrong? Where are you?
Dana quickly keyed in the coordinates to send help.
Who is going to kill you?
Allison didn't answer, and Dana checked the connection. She hadn't lost it. Not yet.
Allison, are you there? Can you see anyone who might help you? What's happening?
Barely aware of standing, she realized she'd raised her voice. All the other dispatchers were staring at her. Was that wind on the other end of the line? She stared at the coordinates and tried to make out their location. As near as she could tell, it was close to where they'd trained the dogs yesterday. Had Garrett hurt Allison? Was that what she meant by next? Shudders worked their way down her spine at the continued silence on the phone.
Allison!
She'd given up hoping for an answer when she heard a choked scream. Then the line went dead. Dana frantically called the sheriff's line to request assistance, but every fiber of her being knew it was too late. Chapter 13. His nose up, Spirit leaned into the wind. Boone pulled in the mainsail and manipulated the front steering runner to turn the boat. Wind stung his face as he rounded the lake and headed into the breeze. Clouds of snow clung to tree branches from last night's snow, and the only world he cared to know right now was white and cold. He resisted an impulse to stand and shout into the wind. Nothing compared to being out on the ice. The scrape of the runners on the ice was the most melodious sound he had heard in his life. He saw a quick movement up ahead, a parka-clad man running for the shore. The guy disappeared into the thick scrub of the tree line. He'd probably been ice fishing, so Boone slowed his boat in case an ice hole lurked ahead. As the boat slowed, he saw something on the ice. Not a hole, but what appeared to be a pile of blankets or something. He took off his sunglasses to see better. Wait, that wasn't a pile of material. A person's face turned up toward the blue sky overhead. He managed to get the boat stopped in time and yanked down the sail. Boone anchored the boat and stepped out onto the ice. Hey! The person on the ice didn't move, and an icy certainty formed in his gut as he neared. A woman,
Her wet hair spread out on the ice, lying on her back. He gasped, "Allison!" His chest squeezed at the paleness of her skin. Slipping and sliding on the frozen lake, he managed to reach her side. Blood pooled by her head from a cut on her forehead. There was an open hole beside her, as if she'd been ice fishing. But she was soaking wet from her hair to her chest. He tried to find a pulse in her neck. Nothing. "Allison!" He tried again to find a pulse at her throat, then moved to her wrist. When he didn't get a heartbeat, he unzipped her parka and put his head onto her chest to listen. She couldn't be dead. He stared into her beautiful face and began CPR. "Breathe, Allison." Pump, pump. He counted off the compressions, then blew into her mouth twice before repeating the routine. After several rounds, perspiration dripped from his forehead. There was no response. What had happened? Maybe she'd fallen. He gave a slight shake of his head. She was wet, like she'd been in the water. But if she had, she'd never been able to get out by herself. That man. Half rising, Boone turned toward the tree line but saw no movement. He yanked off his gloves with his teeth and pulled out his cell phone to call the sheriff. He'd keep doing CPR until help arrived. A sob forced its way past the constriction in his throat, and moisture flooded his eyes. Spirit whined and licked his face. Before he could dial, he heard the whoop-whoop of a helicopter overhead. He waved both hands in the air and shouted, "Here!" The chopper dipped a bit as if to acknowledge his wave, then descended to the ice. The fierce wind from the rotors bit into his cheeks, but he continued the CPR. The helicopter finally settled, and the rotor rotation slowed. Two paramedics disembarked, followed by Mason's familiar, bulky form. How had they heard about this? Maybe the guy Boone had seen called it in. Sliding on the ice, the paramedics manhandled the stretcher to Allison's side. Boone stepped out of the way, though in his heart, he knew they were too late. He took several steps to meet Mason. I think she's gone. I tried CPR, but she's not responding. His voice wobbled, and he knuckled the moisture out of his eyes. The paramedics checked her, then grabbed the defibrillator. One of them opened her coat and rolled up her shirt to get to her skin. "Clear!" The paramedic administered the electric shock several times, but Allison never responded. Boone sank to his knees and let out a groan. "She's gone." Mason's big hand came down on Boone's shoulder. "You know what happened?" Unable to speak again, Boone shook his head. "Did she call you too?" Boone lifted his head. "Too? She called for help?" "She called dispatch. Dana Newell took the call and reported it." Boone turned and stared at the paramedics as they loaded Allison onto a stretcher. Their lack of urgency told him everything he already knew. His throat closed tighter again, and he clenched his fist as he struggled to get his grief under control. "I'm sorry, Boone. Did you see anyone out here who might have done this?" "Done this?" Boone raised his head. "You think she was murdered?" "She called Dana and said, 'He's going to kill me next.'" Dana tried to get more information, but the connection ended. Boone gestured toward the shore. "I saw a man running into the trees. That was before I saw Allison's body. I didn't think much about it at first, and when I saw the chopper, I assumed he'd gone to call for help." Mason's hazel eyes sharpened. "What'd he look like?" "I was too far away to tell. He wore a black parka and snow pants. I'd guess him to be about 6 feet tall. That's about all I saw, because he was so covered up." Boone turned and pointed. "I was back there by the curve when I saw him. I'm not even positive his parka was black. It was just an impression." He started toward the shore, but Mason grabbed his arm. "This is my job, Boone. Let me handle this." "You're here by yourself. You could use some help." He held Mason's gaze until the sheriff finally nodded and released his arm. Boone did Mason the courtesy of lagging back to let him take the lead. Spirit loped along beside him. Mason walked to the side of the large tracks leading into the woods. "I wear an 11 shoe. This looks a little bigger. Maybe a 12. "Yeah, I wear a 12. Looks about the size of my print. You recognize the tread?" Mason knelt and looked more closely at the footprint. "No, but we'll get a mold of it and see what forensics can tell us." He rose and headed for the trees again. "Did you yell at the guy?"
No, I had no reason to when I saw him. I thought he'd been ice fishing.
Why had he assumed that? Boone tried to remember if the man had carried any fishing gear.
I think he might have had something in his hand that I assumed was a pole, but I was too far away to see it.
They reached the trees and followed the prints to the road, where the snow was mashed down.
Looks like a four-wheel drive, Boone said.
Mason nodded. Yep, he's gone.
Bree's head throbbed from crying so much. She sat on the sofa with Cade's arm around her and Samson pressing against her leg. The fire flickered in the hearth, but nothing could penetrate the cold permeating her. How could Allison be dead? It didn't make sense.
Dana, pale and red-eyed, stirred in the armchair across from Bree.
I should go home.
Chris was back from Florida and would want to know what had happened. The doorbell rang and Bree sprang to her feet. She half-tripped over Samson as she went to the door. Cade would have gotten it, but she wanted to do something and get out of her own head. Through the window in the door, she saw Boone's bowed head, her chest squeezed as she yanked on the doorknob and opened the door. There were no words, so she didn't try to fill the silence with anything. Her eyes filled again as she pulled him inside and shut the door against the wind before embracing him. His shoulders shook, and he clutched her hard. He exhaled harshly, then pulled away.
Sorry to come so late. I've been with my aunt and uncle. They're devastated.
Allison's parents owned the local jewelry store and had always been kind to her.
Of course they are. I wanted to see you.
She took his coat and hung it in the closet. Any break at all in the case? He followed her into the living room.
No, that guy I saw, his vehicle tracks merged with the road. I drove around aimlessly all afternoon and stopped half a dozen people in SUVs and trucks to see if they'd seen anything. It was a dead end.
When will the coroner rule on the cause of death?
Dana's voice wobbled, and she pulled her knees up into the overstuffed chair.
A few days.
He dropped into the other chair beside Dana. Bree went back to her spot beside her husband.
You look exhausted. Want to stay here tonight with us? The spare room is all yours.
I have to go home. There's a full day with tourists tomorrow, and I'll need to arrange someone to take my place.
Bree nodded. Boone was never one to neglect his duty. Cade poured coffee from the carafe into a fresh mug and leaned across to hand it to Boone.
If you need someone to take your place on a hike or ice climbing, I can take a group. I've got some vacation time coming.
Boone shot him a grateful look.
I might have to take you up on that, Cade. I am short-handed right now.
There's some new ice out at Copper Falls. I saw it today. I could take a group out there.
Let me make some calls and see what I've got.
Boone set down his coffee and pulled out his phone, then rose and walked into the kitchen. The low rumble of his voice came a few seconds later. Bree tucked her hand into Cade's arm. She had a good man right here. Not many would jump to help the way he did.
Have you seen Laurie today? I don't think she's come home from the airport yet. I'd feel better if she were home.
She called and said she was running late.
His tone was resigned, and she knew he'd given up trying to monitor his sister's life. At 16, Laurie had been a handful, and now at 23, she held her own life firmly in her hands and brooked no interference. All the worry in the world couldn't corral her, even though her headstrong ways had brought trouble her way in large doses over the years. Being with Laurie was like being on a seesaw. One minute, you were up when seeing signs of maturity, and the next minute, you hit the ground because she didn't seem to possess common sense. The door in the hall banged open, and Laurie called out,
Cade, Bree, you guys here?
Zorro leaped to his feet with an excited bark and raced to greet her. Still dressed in a parka and knee-high leather boots over slim-fitting dark jeans, she appeared in the doorway with her dog by her side. Her smile faded as she looked them over.
What's wrong?
Bree held her gaze and told Laurie what had happened. The happy smile and high color drained from Laurie's face.
We don't know for sure what happened, but I'd appreciate it if you texted and let us know where you are until this guy is caught. I was worried when you didn't come home straight from the airport.
Laurie shrugged out of her coat, revealing a figure-hugging red turtleneck. She was so beautiful, and a wave of warmth settled in Bree's middle.
Even when Laurie was difficult, she belonged to them, was part of them. Bree wanted to keep her safe, to see her grow up and have kids they could spoil. Sometimes she didn't think it would ever happen. Laurie laid her coat onto the ottoman. "I'll let you know." "I didn't mean to worry you." Her eyes sparked, and she tossed her head. The lamplight glittered on something on Laurie's hand. Bree reached over and caught Laurie's hand. "Is that an engagement ring?" Laurie snatched her hand away, but a smile lifted her lips. "It is. His name is Peter Lovett, and he's wonderful." "I didn't realize you'd been dating anyone. How long have you been seeing him?" Kate asked. "I don't tell you every single thing I'm doing. I'm an adult, Kate, even if you haven't figured it out yet." Time to tamp down the antagonism. Bree smiled and took her sister-in-law's hand again. "It's gorgeous, Laurie. And you know we only want you to be happy. Where'd you meet him?" Laurie shrugged. "What does it matter? I think you'll like him. He's mature and settled with a great job. He's a pharmaceutical rep. Blonde, with the bluest eyes you've ever seen. He's so kind and sweet to me. Can't you just be happy for once and not grill me over every little thing?" She tugged her hand free again, then petted Zorro. "Of course we're happy for you." Bree rose and enfolded Laurie in a hug. "Congratulations. When do we get to meet him?" Laurie's returning hug was perfunctory. "Soon, I hope." She pulled away. "I'm going to bed." Her dog at her side, she stalked off. Bree sank back on the sofa. "Here we go." Chapter 14. The wind whistled through the trees and whispered along the rocks, and snow had begun to fall as the promised storm moved in. Boone stamped his feet on the snow-covered ground to warm them, but he couldn't bring himself to leave his vigil by the murder site. His friends had wanted to help him, but nothing could numb the pain splitting his chest wide open. He stood well outside the yellow crime scene tape and stared at the dark stain gleaming in the moonlight. He should have done something to prevent this. Desperate to bring his sister's killer to justice, he'd egged Allison on in her investigation. If he'd left this in the professional's hands, his cousin would still be alive. He knew this into the farthest reaches of his soul. This was his fault. A branch snapped behind him and he whirled. "Who's there?" A shadow moved from the cover of the trees and the moonlight illuminated Chris Newell's face. He wore a blue parka and knit cap.
"I went by your cabin, and when I saw the lights were out, I thought I'd find you here.
Dana told me what happened. I'm really sorry, buddy."
The tension eased from Boone's shoulders. He and Chris did the man-hug thing.
"Thanks, Chris."
"I can't believe she's gone."
Chris stepped back and shoved his hands in his parka's pockets.
"I know there's nothing I can do, not really, but I wanted you to know I'm here if you need anything."
He gestured back the way he came.
"I brought you a beef pasty. You probably haven't eaten."
"Not since breakfast."
The thought of food turned Boone's stomach, but it had been thoughtful of Chris to bring something.
"Thanks."
He took one more look at the stain.
"The hole froze over. It's 20 below. Wouldn't take long in that kind of weather. Did she stumble on an ice fisherman out here? Maybe she caught him doing something illegal.
The sheriff should come out to explore the area under the ice. Maybe she found a guy stashing drugs or something."
"I hadn't thought of that.
I wonder if Mason has. It's a good idea."
But Boone's gut told him Allison had died because of her investigation. He hoped he was wrong. It would help ease the guilt squeezing the air from his lungs. Chris clapped a gloved hand on Boone's shoulder.
"Let's get you out of the wind. You look lousy."
"I had hoped the killer would come back tonight."
"I think that only happens in the movies. Why would he run the risk of getting caught?"
"Sick thrills?"
Boone's blood heated at the thought of some monster gloating over what he'd done here. Allison deserved justice. So did his sister. He tore his gaze from the murder scene and looked at Chris.
"You glad to have your sister here?"
"Yeah, and happier yet she's away from that low-life waterman, though I'm beginning to wonder if she's any safer here. I never wanted her to go off with him in the first place and did everything I could to talk her out of it. She didn't listen, but she knows now I was right."
"You seen him around?"
"We saw him drive through town in a pickup the other day. She thinks he might have done this."
Chris shook his head.
"I don't buy it. He's not bright enough to do something like this. He's the kind who strikes boldly in broad daylight and doesn't care about who sees him. The guy who did this was clever, didn't leave any clues.
Boone rubbed his forehead.
Maybe you're right. Waterman tried to drown Dana, so Allison thought he was worth checking out.
Chris went still.
Waterman tried to drown my sister?
Maybe drown is too strong a word, but yeah.
He dunked her face in the kitchen sink. Ask her about it.
Chris clenched one gloved hand.
I'll find out if he's still around. Is the sheriff tracking him down? If he isn't, I will.
Boone adjusted his knit cap over his ears.
Right now. I hope he's looking for a killer. We could check it out, too, you and me. You have the notes Allison made on her investigation. Maybe we could start there.
They're probably in her cabin. He'd given Allison a cabin at his place to call her own while she was in town.
The sheriff told me to stay out until he had a chance to inspect it. If he gets those notes first, we're out of luck.
Boone nodded.
Let's go back to my place and take a look.
He and Chris plunged back through the trees to the road. The 15 minutes to drive home seemed way too long. Would law enforcement have taken everything by now? A sinking sensation in his gut started the minute he approached his cousin's cabin. There should have been crime scene tape across the door, but access appeared free and clear. He saw a wadded-up length of yellow tape in the trash barrel by the road as he stepped onto the sidewalk. Chris joined him.
You have the key?
Yeah.
But I don't think it will do any good. They've processed this already.
Let's check to be sure. Boone punched in the lock's master code, and the door opened. The cabin was a one-room studio. The last time he'd been in here, papers and a laptop computer covered the small wooden desk in the corner. That desk was bare now. No computer, no papers. Every drawer had been pulled out, and the bedclothes lay tangled on the floor in a heap. The deputies had been very thorough. Boone picked up a hair tie that still held a few strands of Allison's brown hair.
We're too late.
The light shone out the windows of the lighthouse home, creating a pretty picture. Garrett crouched behind the neighbor's shed and watched Bree standing on the back deck as her dog nosed through the snow in the backyard. Once she was gone, all he'd have to do was drop his little gift over the fence into her yard.
Hurry up, Samson! She called.
Garrett had expected her to let the dog out before bed, but he didn't think she'd stay out watching him. The animal was a menace and had nearly led her and the sheriff to his hiding spot. The threat was easily neutralized by the little gift at his feet. Maybe she wouldn't be so eager to poke her nose into someone else's business. And it would teach Dana a lesson as well.
Go inside, he muttered.
The dog paused, nose up. He swung to face Garrett's direction. A low growl carried on the wind, and Garrett winced. Surely the mutt couldn't smell him from this far. Dana had prattled on about how a search dog was trained, but he had tuned her out most of the time. Still, hadn't she said they were air-scent dogs? Maybe the mutt really could tell he was over here.
What is it, Samson?
Bree came down the back steps and stepped into the circle of illumination from the security light. Ruff raised on the back of his neck, the dog ran to the fence, barking with urgency. Garrett could almost feel the dog's dark eyes fixed on him, though he knew it was too dark for the animal to see him.
Cade, there's an intruder!
Bree called over her shoulder, then took a couple of steps into the yard.
Is someone there?
The moon came out from behind the clouds and illuminated the landscape with ghostly light. Garrett shrank farther behind the shed and sidled to the other side where he was sure he couldn't be seen. But he could no longer see the Matthews' backyard. Bree could be opening a gate and heading his way for all he knew.
Stupid dog had ruined everything.
Garrett peeked around the side of the building. Cade exited the house and approached a gate at the back end of the yard. Garrett had no choice but to run for his truck. As he ran back along Negaunee Street, he stopped. What an idiot. He'd left the cooler behind. At least he'd been wearing gloves. Morning sunlight poked through the blinds in Boone's bedroom window. He groaned and threw his arm over his eyes. The bedding had been kicked into a tangled mess by his restless night, and he doubted he'd gotten even a full hour of sleep. Every time he closed his eyes, he saw Allison's face. His ancient heater kicked on and blew out some warm air to moderate the cool room temperature. He rose and went to the desk under the north-facing window. Spirit followed him and lay at his feet. After the snowstorm last night, there were likely some cancellations to today's excursion. If there were two or more, he would just call off today's hike to the waterfall. He fired up his email and began to sort it. Yep, three cancellations as expected. He texted the remaining two hikers and told them to reschedule for later in the week. Both were locals, so they'd likely call him for another time. He paged down through his emails, then saw Allison's name on one. It was like a punch to the gut to know she'd sent that email when she was still alive and smiling. His eyes burned, and he gave a harsh exhale before he clicked on the message. Hey, cuz. I tried to stop by your cabin this morning, but you were already up and at 'em. Typical. I found some interesting information about Faith Rogerson's death, and it ties to Renee's in interesting ways. Call me when you get this, and I'll come over. I know I'm being a little paranoid, but I thought I heard someone outside my cabin last night. Just in case, I'm attaching all the notes I've made on my investigation. I'd hate for all this work to go to waste if someone stole my laptop. I've got a backup, but you just never know. So, here it is. Call me, A. He pressed his fingers against his temples. Spirit rose and whined, then thrust his nose into Boone's lap. He petted him. How he wished he could pick up the phone and call her. He'd never hear her cheery voice again. With a quick command, he renamed the file and saved it under Cancellations. An intruder wouldn't be likely to look there. He couldn't read her notes. Not yet. He closed his computer and pulled on jeans and a sweatshirt, then went to the kitchen. He fed Spirit first, then filled the pot with water. The enticing aroma of coffee filled the room, and he whipped up a bacon and cheese omelet, then poured himself a mug of coffee. He flipped on the news. When the local TV station showed the scene on the lake, he turned it up to see if law enforcement had found out anything new. But the reporter just repeated the same old information. When the knock came at the door, it was only 7. Spirit huffed, but didn't bark. Boone was still barefooted and hadn't combed his hair. Through the window, he caught a glimpse of Dana's brown hair. He swung open the door, and Phantom immediately touched noses with Spirit before pushing past him. She studied him. You look terrible.
Hey, come in. Your dog already is.
He has no manners. She stepped inside. Sorry it's so early. I couldn't sleep. Seems like you didn't either.
I didn't. So I decided to get up and have breakfast.
He held up his mug.
Coffee?
Sure. She took off her coat and boots, then followed him to the kitchen and perched on a stool at the breakfast bar. Nice light granite, and white cabinets are my favorite. And oak floors. It's gorgeous. Did you do the work yourself?
Yeah, except for the granite.
He poured a mug of coffee.
Cream?
Just black. She accepted the coffee and curled her fingers around the mug. He liked the way she looked sitting in his kitchen. Her hair appeared soft enough to touch, and her blue eyes reminded him of Lake Superior on a summer day. Blue and mysterious. I bet you're wondering what I'm doing here so early. The compassion in her eyes told the story. He would have been more surprised if she hadn't shown up today to check on him. To his surprise, he realized he already thought of her as a close friend. That was dangerous.
It crossed my mind, but I figured misery loved company.
She took a sip of the coffee. I was thinking about Allison's investigation into Renee's murder. The way she said he was going to kill her next made me assume it was whoever killed Renee. I want to talk to Garrett and see if he might have had something to do with it, but I don't want to go alone. I don't trust him.
You mean see him today?
Her lips flattened in a determined line, and she nodded. I thought I'd see if you'd go with me. I could ask him to meet me somewhere. Garrett might not talk if he knows someone else is there, so you could be out of sight, but ready to step in if need be. If I hadn't come here, maybe Allison would still be alive.
You don't know that.
He thought through the plan. While he didn't know this Garrett Waterman, he had every confidence in his own ability to handle anyone.
I'm in. What about work? Aren't you supposed to be there already?
Mason told me to take the day off. Any idea where we could set it up? Somewhere you can hear, yet can't be seen?
What about Bree's SAR building? No one is using it today, and there's a small storage room just off the office area where I could hide out.
Great idea.
I'm sure Bree would give me the key. She never locks it. A hiker nearly froze one winter and managed to get inside her building. It was the only structure around for miles, so she looks at it as a safe haven in the winter. Boone shook his head. I wouldn't tell her about this until it's all over. She wouldn't like you putting yourself in danger.
But you think it's okay?
Only if I'm there. He gulped the last of his coffee. Give him a call. Let's see what we can find out.
Chapter 15. No part of her wanted to ever see Garrett's face again. Dana squared her shoulders and pulled out her old phone. She hadn't touched this phone since she got to Rock Harbor. I reactivated my old phone so he'd recognize the number. Wish me luck. Boone put his hand on her shoulder.
I'll do more than that.